Who is this gaggle of geese?
We don't have a choice. We have to do what we have to do.
Yep. Yep.
I feel reasonably confident I can.
We're jocks and gills. All
right, here we go. 1, 2, 3. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. It's, what day is it?
It is a Thursday.
It's a Thursday. It's like it's our normal day, my normal day. We are in Cleveland at the Quicken Loans Arena, just off the court. It's practice day today, although the teams aren't going to practice. Anyway, I'm with Kevin Arnovitz and Andrew Hahn. We may be joined a little later by a cast of characters that we normally get. We obviously have a game last night, but I want to start talking off about the Sixers. Brian Colangelo resigned today. The press conference hasn't actually taken place yet, so we will, by the time this comes out, we will have heard some commentary that we have statements from everybody. So we're going to be a little bit behind on that with the podcast situation, but Kevin, you've spent a lot of time with the Sixers this season, written extensively about them. What are your thoughts?
This was an organization that was gathering stability, right? And that was, you know, whether you're a Brian Colangelo person, you're not a Brian Colangelo person, this was a figure who was endorsed as a mainstream as executive can get in the NBA, right? He brings in a team of unimpeachable people, and we're now prepared for this long reign of stability for an organization that really hasn't had it for the better part of two decades. So this is incredibly disruptive. Brett Brown has now been named the interim head of basketball operations. I have large meta takeaways, Brian, about how terrible this platform is, how it appeals to everybody's worst vanity, how it makes people care about critiques and criticism more than they actually should. Just the rank disregard for good judgment, whether or not it was Brian, whether or not it was his wife. But if anything, it has disrupted an organization that was well on its way to sort of a serene period of of what will be prosperity, whether or not it ends in an NBA championship or just being very good for a very long time. It's bananas.
He's not getting his due process here. But
what do you mean by that?
Well, he didn't get to like present an active defense, and even the law firm who they hired to investigate this said in their statement today that they can't prove that he was directly involved. And they sort of danced around the fact that they didn't think that he actually was directly responsible. So he's losing his job for something that they can't demonstratively prove that he did. However, they don't have the luxury of vetting this whole due process out. So in other words, he's kind of being treated somewhat unfairly in terms of being able to defend himself, but he's compromised. I don't think there's any other way to say it. He's compromised both with people within the organization itself, because he did some criticism of those people, the way at least it came out. And he also was compromised with potentially new members of the organization.
All right. So, and I am a due process guy.
You are the definition of a due process guy.
I am a due process guy. But I would say a couple of things. I mean, one is, this is not a court of law, right? This is a private entity, the Philadelphia 76ers, whatever their devil Sixers world is, the Harris Blitzer entity, which doesn't necessarily...
Yeah, I mean, as long as they pay him.
Well, that's an interesting...
Well, I'm sure
question.
They... I'm, well,
there's some
I'm
sort
sure,
of
I'm sure they are, yes.
The counter would be, you made a mess. Now...
You made a mess in May / June, where they don't have the luxury of waiting
right
for it to cool off.
Or you could argue, listen, if it was indeed he had absolutely no awareness, are you responsible for the conduct of your kin in a job? Right? Like, let's say your spouse, Brian, started
Yes.
Mouthing off editorial opinions about ESPN personalities, maybe wrongs that were done unto you, let's say, in the course of the job, did it with a burner account. Now, obviously, you're a less public person than Brian Colangelo, but are you responsible for the conduct of your kin with very sensitive information?
In many situations, no. In this situation, probably yes.
Okay.
I think the one of the most damaging parts of this, one of the most indicting parts of this, is that in after the Ringer kind of set a trap for him. The Ringer told, they knew of five accounts, and they told the Sixers about two of them, and they watched, and within moments. Or short period of time. I don't know about his moments. Short period of time, all five accounts went silent or private. That, to me, is the most indicting piece of information because that, to me, makes it clear that Brian Colangelo knew his wife was doing this. Or at least, I mean, maybe it makes it clear. It makes me very suspicious that he did. Unless, again, she's intercepting his calls and emails where he would have, where she would have heard. That, to me, is hard to get around. Now, he made a statement today where he pretty aggressively blamed his wife for everything. And he also said that they were inaccurate and they do not represent his own views or opinions of the organization.
Brian, how do you... Oh, this is Andrew. Sorry.
Hi, Andrew.
We introduced you, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, I was running around looking to try and wrangle up other cast of characters, as you mentioned at the top. No cast to be found yet.
Just a lot of characters.
Plenty of characters, though.
Just the characters, yeah.
I mean, it's a difficult situation. He even says, we're a family, we'll work through this together. To be honest with you, since he's out, he's got to say that it's not his fault because he's going to try to get another job sometime. But I didn't know if he needed to completely throw his wife under the bus like that. He should just have said, it was a mistake that this happened, and I will move forward with my career. But he really did throw her under the bus, you know. Her actions were seriously misguided. And while I recognize how inappropriate these actions were, she acted independently without my knowledge or consent. She may have acted without his consent, but I wonder if he acts without his knowledge. But I don't want to parse every word in here. He was compromised. And, you know, interesting that Brett Brown was chosen, not anybody else in the front office. Brett Brown was chosen to lead the basketball operations for the time being. I can't imagine that stays that way.
No. I don't know that Brett would want that job.
But you know, a lot of people are jumping to the conclusion of David Griffin. I mean, I obviously know David Griffin very well. I think he would be a tremendous choice to lead a franchise.
He has a Venn diagram here. He is both probably the best available candidate on the market, and a candidate that if you were trying to woo certain high-profile players, has the seal of approval of the top talent in the league. And by the way, I think this is important not only if you were, let's say, trying to woo one LeBron James, but frankly, any other free agent.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very rare that a top two or three player is on the record with vehement statements supporting a general manager who is not currently in office for his team, and LeBron has done that on Griffin's behalf.
Yeah, I also think that Danny Ferry is an interesting candidate here. Ferry interviewed for their general manager job twice. He was offered it once, turned it down to take the Hawks job. Interviewed again when they hired Brian Colangelo. So he knows the ownership, has been offered the job by the ownership, and he has a long-standing relationship with Brett Brown.
An executive mentioned Ferry's name to me on Monday. Do you replace baggage with baggage?
It certainly is an issue. Danny, again, has interviewed for several GM jobs since he left Atlanta. He interviewed in Brooklyn, interviewed in Philadelphia. He was a candidate in Milwaukee last year but didn't interview. And he was suggested to the Bucks by Adam Silver. So he has the backing and support of the league. We know that David Blitzer and Josh Harris lean on Adam before. They leaned on Adam when they made their move here. Danny Ferry also has a relationship with LeBron James. Not that they're going to go that route. I'm just saying he's another candidate that I think merits consideration here beyond just the assumption that David Griffin's going to be the guy.
Absolutely. And he's incredibly capable.
And he's worked the last 2 years for the New Orleans Pelicans. By the way, have made some really smart decisions, and he's been a consultant. He would be the first to tell you that Dell Demps has been the guy who's done these deals, but he's been a consultant at an organization that has done a pretty good job the last couple of years.
Didn't you and I remember when we reported the Atlanta story the summer of 2015, the notion was, is he would spend, quote, 2 years in executive, what they call it, what, GM jail. And 2 years has expired.
That's what Greg Popovich told him.
Right.
He said you were facing a 2 year, penalty for your misjudgment. So, I don't know, we'll see. I mean, I'll tell you this though. It's a pretty damn important hire. And, you know, the Sixers are, in my mind, the most upwardly mobile team in the league. Maybe the Celtics, it's kind of weird because the Celtics are upwardly mobile because they're getting players that they have back from injury. But in terms of improving the roster, in my mind, the Sixers, who have the 10th pick, cap space, trade assets.
There's not a more elastic team.
Yes.
In the league.
So first off, it's a very, very desirable job.
Yes.
In fact, some guys who have jobs may be interested in leaving theirs to go there. So the Sixers, while I think that it is imperative that they have somebody in place before July 1st, they also should vet the entire market, even guys who are not technically on it at this point.
Is there any kind of cascading fallout to this beyond Colangelo? Like, Jerry Colangelo was the consultant for the team before Brian got hired as a general manager. Adam Silver is the one that went ahead and recommended Brian, I think, for the general manager spot. Do any of them get any blemishes or tarnishes from this?
Well, I think in the days and weeks ahead, we will hear and they'll be reporting more about behind the scenes of this, because I'm going to be careful how I say it. I'm just going to step back. I'm looking forward to there being reporting about what may or may not have been happening behind the scenes, especially over the last week on this. This was something that took days to play out for a reason. There was a lot of machinations.
Well, one of the assumptions I had is, obviously, if an executive is dismissed for cause, right, that executive does not have claim on future earnings or owed to him. And if an organization would want to not have to pay out the term of that contract, they would have to demonstrate that they took great care and it went through a very arduous process, hiring the most unimpeachable law firm and with the evidence gathered in a thorough investigation, then and only then made their decision. And my assumption has been that the reason this is, quote, dragged out is because an organization, when dealing with the termination and the possibility of millions owed in the future, does need to sort of show its work if it ever comes that there needs to be a negotiation over those future earnings.
Yeah. Well, let's move on from this and we'll talk a little bit about this. Can be debated and discussed for quite some time.
Andrew, you had asked that one of the industries of Cleveland were, I think, vacuuming is a leading industry in Cleveland.
Legitimately?
Yeah, I don't know.
if you ask Mr. Windhorst, he would say sadness is the leading industry.
Oh, I said grief, right?
I gave Andrew a tour of the city yesterday.
How did I not get an invitation to this?
How would you describe that tour?
I would say 5 stars, and I would give Ryan a very generous tip for his Uber piece.
There wasn't like one of those little double-decker buses when you were up top?
We don't have that here.
No.
But I gave Andrew a real tour where I told him real facts.
I will say, Brian,
positive and negative.
I find you to be a very genial person, and I don't know what it is about the city, but there's a lot more surliness, a lot more
aggressiveness. You're much surlier in this arena than you are in any other of the 29 arenas I've been in.
Interesting. I'm not going to deny that. there may be something to there. You may not need LeBron giving psychological analysis as he offered to Mark Schwartz last night. Last night we saw a historically great performance from Kevin Durant. The Warriors are just a tremendous team. And last night, they don't play smart every night, but they played smart last night. And they're going to win their third title in 4 years. They're definitely, you know, in the dynasty zone right now. But they haven't played their best in two of the three games in this series.
And they're up 3-0. So a couple things that kind of stood out to me last night. There are two ways to really excel in the NBA as a team. One is to perfect a system. And I'm talking here about the San Antonio Spurs. The other is just to have a transcendent superstar who can score at will outside of a system, can break off and win you ball games.
That's Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, right?
Right.
Rondae Hollis-Jefferson was just in here for some reason. We should have had him on the podcast. No.
And with the Warriors...
RJH.
Good defender.
Or RHJ.
Yes. With a hyphen.
Yes. Sorry.
And what the Warriors have done since the acquisition of Durant essentially is say, we can go either way. And on nights when the system fails us, when that pass-happy offense gets sloppy or the shooters off those splits aren't hitting shots, go there. And they can Wonder Twins power activate.
Let's workshop this. I wanna come up with a term. I've said that they have an MVP in reserve, but that doesn't quite quantify it.
I think it's the most valuable insurance policy in the history of professional sport.
Yeah, but nobody wants to be the insurance policy. No. They want to be the asset being insured. Durant would never call himself an insurance policy.
Never.
What? They have a fail-safe. They have a redundancy. They have MVP redundancy. And MVP redundancy played in last night. Tremendously. The thing about it is, the Cavs have to sit there. Obviously, the Cavs thought they could have won game one, should have won game one. They look there last night. They see Steph go one for whatever from 3-point range. They see Clay not play well. They had a really good first half, one of their best halves that they've had in the series, and they're down 3-0. A year ago, they were down 2-0. They came in here. They had an 8-point lead, or a 7-point lead late in the fourth quarter of game three. They blew out the Warriors in game one, and they are in game four. And they sat around all summer saying this could have been 2-2, and it's a 3-game series, and we have the best player. You never know. But that was not reality. Reality was that they blew that game with the 11-0 run they allowed. The Warriors took it, and that was the case. And now I'm just telling you, they're sitting there thinking to themselves, it could be 2-1. And while they're right, it's not. And the better team has outlasted them and outplayed them when it's mattered. And it is not 2-1, it is 3-0.
One of the frustrations I have with the way we talk about the Cavs, and it's LeBron and everybody else, and they're an inferior team in terms of talent, is I go back to this system thing and watching them trying to devise a well-timed defense to the Warriors, which is impossible. Look, I mean, I'm not suggesting that any team can really do it for long stretches of time. But part of that flip switching, it's not even about, oh, you should try hard in December for virtue's sake. It doesn't work that way. And I was talking to an assistant on the Warriors staff, and one of the things they said is, they really have amped up and ratcheted up their effort individually. There isn't a guy on that floor for the Cavs who isn't defending with 100% effort. He's but the timing's off. When we're watching film, their timing's off. And that's something that has to be perfected over the course of a season.
Habits. And it's about building habits.
Exactly. And this is a team that I don't want to pile on because I admire a lot about him, but has just an arrogant indifference to habit building that just feels, and I don't know if it's the reliability on LeBron and given who he is, there's a feel that we don't have to. The smartest kid in the class can walk into the final and do fine, at least score an A-. But it's part of me is sort of I have a certain level of sympathy, but you've shown absolutely no interest in doing that kind of work.
I know, but part of me is How do you defend for a 33-footer from Durant at the end of the shot clock? They played good defense on that.
It's not that possession. It's the the LeBron, it's the Draymond from the high post to JaVale.
They get caught on switches and then exactly. you have a guy flashing open to the rim.
You're not going to defend that from Durant.
This is an interesting thought experiment then, since both of you guys covered the LeBron era Heat in Miami. Would that team have been appropriately set up to guard and take down this Durant level Warriors?
It's an interesting question, Andrew. You know, that team played very aggressive defense. They trapped picks at the top of the key, and it required an incredible amount of energy. I mean, it's one of the reasons why those teams got to the end of the season and just flopped over the finish line. They would trap, and they would rotate, and Bosch would move around, and LeBron would move around, and they would generate massive amounts of turnovers and create fast break points and go on these instantaneous 12-0 runs, 15-2 runs. I think Matt Moore, who was with CBS at the time but now is with the Action Network, he coined the phrase the flying death machine that would just sort of turn on. You know, you couldn't stop them. Given how prone the Warriors are to turning the ball over in a seven-game series, I think there will be moments where the Heat would embarrass them. Having said that, the Heat never had to cover the ground. And one of the things about the Heat, you could pass your way through it. If you competently threw three passes, you could beat the Heat.
San Antonio Spurs.
Then they did. And the wager essentially of the Heat was making, you're not going to make three good passes before we get to you. Right. And there are nights when the Warriors throw three good passes on like 75% of the possessions. So I think it would be an interesting series. I have no idea. I mean, it's hard to compare because LeBron was at this physical peak at that point. You know, the Heat.
And Dwayne plays gaps as well as anybody. He was a perfect system.
Dwayne's one of the
one
of the best. I mean, shot blocking, stealing, one of the best defensive wings, defensive wings.
It was a system. It was a system. The helpline is going to be way the hell over here. You know, the freedom to let LeBron and Wade, you know, make what I call defensive reads, provisional decisions on based on what's materializing on the floor. Bosch was maybe the best pick and roll big man defender of his time.
Chris Bosch was such a great player.
You know, and Mario could fight over. Like that's the thing. Like they Mario, had a really good defensive
Mario
personnel.
Defended. And Mario had long arms, and Mario executed in the clutch. He was a great clutch player. Obviously back to college. So I would love to watch that.
I was just thinking like 2012 Heat versus 2018. Or 16
the 27 game winning streak was the peak of LeBron's, athletic career. You go back and you look at the games that he played within that streak, and the stats that he put up and everything. That was his absolute peak. Now the way he plays with such confidence now, and the way he executes and is so efficient. He's a different player now. But 2012 LeBron was
superior athlete and now a superior game manager today.
Good game manager. That's good. He's more of a game manager.
I love watching him manage the game.
But the thing about it is, so like, you know, the story that I wrote after the game last night. This is, you know, Durant played against LeBron 21 times when he was with the Thunder, both in Miami and Cleveland. They both averaged 29 points, both LeBron and Durant, 29 points against each other. They both shot exactly 50%. LeBron had averaged like one more rebound a game and a couple more assists. But essentially, they were very comparable stats against each other. Durant was 4-17. 4-17, including obviously 1-4 in the 2012 finals.
And had help, right? I mean, it wasn't as if he was
for sure. For sure.
That's what's so interesting about it.
So since Durant's come over to Golden State 2 years ago, they've played 12 times because of the finals. And both average 32 points. Both are shooting 53%. Again, LeBron, a little bit more rebounds, more assists, but again, it's not like one guy's dominating the other. They are putting up the exact same numbers against each other, just as they did when he was with Oklahoma City. But now he's 10-2.
So So, Andrew, a few weeks ago, I got a package in the mail that you sent to me, or you had sent to me.
Yes, I don't do my own package postal work. What is it called? Mail sending? Oh, this is
yeah. And I also got a package from Dollar Shave Club, which is separate from the other package you sent me. No, but you you had Dollar Shave Club send me their kit that I think anybody can get for the $5 fee to join them. You know, it's razors. There's creams and gels. And you never, you know, as Seinfeld once said, you never. Well, he didn't say it, but Jackie Childs once said, you never know what a bomb can do. So I don't know about those creams and gels. I'm not a creams and gels guy, but I have to say, I used the razor, and you know, it was a pretty close shave.
I have a question. If you're not a cream or a gel person, then what do you use to lather your face?
Oh, I just go straight. No, I'm just kidding. I use saliva. No, I use shaving cream, but these are special pre and post. There's a whole cream and gel system that they send to you.
Yeah.
And there's butters and things like that, and I haven't delved into that yet. But I would say the razor was a very close shave, and I mean, it sounds cliche to say that, but even like 7 or 8 hours later, I was like, man, that was a pretty close shave. And I don't know if you've noticed this. I certainly have. But like what they charge for razors, the other companies, like it was just an absolute scandal. And they've had to drop their prices. Like all of a sudden they've dropped their prices by 30 or 40% because of Dollar Shave Club, because Dollar Shave Club was providing, equal or better razors for like a fraction of the price. And so they were getting undercut. And so I gotta say, it is a quality razor for a lot less price. And so I have to advocate for it, Andrew.
Why is it called Dollar Shave Club if the package is it like a dollar a day type thing?
I think it's basically like a dollar a week or something like that. Okay. I don't know. I really don't know why. It's certainly less dollars. Like, you know, I would buy them at the grocery store, like, you know, once a month or once every 6 weeks. And you go to the grocery store and like all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, why is my bill
unconscionably expensive? Yes.
$35 higher than normal.
Right.
Oh, that's right. I had to buy razors this time around. And so, already even before I started using Dollar Shave Club, I was benefiting from them because they drove down the price so much that, it was already positively impacting me. And so now that I have the product, I'm just using it and, it is a smooth, close shave, and you can try the balms and the butters and the whatnots too. I'm sure those are very good, but I haven't ventured into that realm yet. But you can join Dollar Shave Club today, and for just $5, you get the free shipping and that six-blade trial size, which is maybe it's the extra blade. I don't think the razor that I used before had six blades. Maybe the extra blade is why it's so close. I don't know, but definitely was close. So you can sign up for $5 and get that trial size, plus the shave butter, the body cleanser. Oh, yeah, there's these One Wipe Charlies, which I have not had a chance to use yet, but certainly they can't hurt, Andrew. They're, you know, personal hygiene wipes.
I didn't really understand what those wipes were. I was confused.
Well, you know, I would assume that you use them to wipe yourself wherever you need wiping. Some places need more than others. But you can get a trial size of all those. I'm going to try the One Wipe Charlie today, in fact. I think today's a good reason. I haven't broken that out yet, but there's no reason why I shouldn't. Then you can keep the blades coming for a few bucks more a month. Get yours at dollarshaveclub.com/hoop. That's dollarshaveclub.com/hoop.
That says it all, right? Essentially, they perform just as competitively as they did before. He went from 4-17 to 10-2. He outmaneuvered LeBron. So now what does LeBron do?
And that, and what I hear you suggesting is that somehow LeBron's decision is very much informed by Durant's path.
Shelly, come sit down. Take a microphone. Take a microphone. Shelly.
Shelly Smith, you have plenty to contribute.
Come over here. Shelly, I know you've never used a microphone before. Ramona Shelburne and Shelly Smith have joined us. Ramona, you made an announcement. Is that public?
Yeah, go ahead. Why not?
What's your announcement that you made last week?
Yeah, well, I've got a little shortstop in the oven here. Got a little baby boy on the way in September. He's going to be a shortstop. I've already decided. Maybe center field.
I was like, you were an outfielder, Ramona.
Yeah, I was an outfielder, but I was a shortstop first. You know, he's definitely not going to be tall.
Is he going to be right-handed? Because there are very few left-handed shortstops.
I think maybe left-handed.
See, there's very few left-handed
shortstops. You don't know that. You can't say
well,
that.
Well, my husband's left-handed.
Well, so my dad's left-handed.
That's Shelly Smith.
So first baseman.
ESPN legend.
First baseman are
or
left-handers.
Lefty reliever.
Lefty reliever.
Now,
those are sought after. Definitely going to make him a switch hitter, though.
A loogie.
Now, yeah. Shelly Smith, ESPN legend, just want to make sure she
legend.
Was introduced.
Oh, yeah. All right, sure, get that in there.
Now, will you want him to be a, is it him?
Yeah, it's a little boy.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I didn't, are you looking for like a slap average, hit for average, or do you want like power hitting?
No, I was more of a hit for average, kind of like double gap hitter.
Yeah.
Like gap. I mean, like, you know, some power. So we're not talking Brett Butler here. Okay, we need some power.
Wow, Brett Butler reference.
Well, you know, it's funny. All three of us. You grew up an Indians fan. I grew up a Braves fan. A
everybody got it.
What if he wants to be a cheerleader?
He can be a cheerleader and a shortstop.
All right.
Brett Butler was one of the the leaders every year in triples.
He's awesome. I love Brett Butler.
He was essential
one of my players
to the
up.
Only good team I followed growing up, which was the 82 Braves.
Well, that was
love
a big
it. Brett you guys want to know who my favorite player growing up was? No one will ever guess, but it's the name of my fantasy team forever. Raul Mondesi. That was my favorite. I don't know why I picked that, but I was a Dodger fan growing up in LA. I played right field. He played right field. I was number one, so the number didn't stick.
I think he was
I just liked how he played. Like, I was like short and compact and muscular and all that, and I hit for power and average and speed.
You were a badass.
Well, he had a strong arm. Yeah, I was.
He had a great stage.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I was a badass. Thank you very much.
I'm gonna own that. Yeah, that's good.
You should.
But like, so I really loved how Mondesi played. I just liked his like, you know, I was a little crazy on the bases, you know, I was a little out of control, but in a good way, in a bad way sometimes, but like, I would make stuff happen. And like, I just
that
loved
hasn't changed.
Mondesi. Exactly. That's true. It hadn't changed. So I think, but it was more like, I think like I was supposed to be taller. That's my theory always. Cause I have like,
I have the same complaint.
Yeah, I know. I wish I was a little bit taller. I don't wish. I think I was supposed to be a little bit taller. But then I got squished. Oh, somebody must have squished me cause I am very like short and compact, you know? So, and muscular. So like, I think if it would have been different, if it was like 5'6", I would have like had a whole different career. That's my theory.
5'6" is still short.
He's trying to be a 5'2".
Thanks.
Anyway, back to the old basketball.
Yeah. Shelly, you've seen a lot of games. What did you think of Durant last night?
Didn't we just leave here and we're back?
This is a very strange scheduling.
I thought it was an unbelievable game, obviously.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant just... I was sitting with like a lot of these old writers who I love. You know, the guys who have been around forever. And...
I take offense to that, Shelly. I know the gray hair is coming a little bit, but
you know, I don't know their last name, but it's Fred and Ken and Tom and
gotcha.
Yeah, and everybody was just amazed every time he hit a shot. It was like holy smoke. So that clearly was the story of the game.
Here's what was interesting to me last night about Durant is that he has not been transcendent during these playoffs. Like, he's so good and so talented. He can score even when he's not playing correctly or the right way, and he's not in his zone. And last night he was finally in his zone. Like, there's a couple games at the beginning of that Houston series. I felt like he kept a minute. Like, he was scoring just in buckets, but we saw him devolve into Oklahoma Kevin a few times in that series.
I think he was below 50%, like 5 out of 6 games over the course.
But he's so good. Like, I think Steve's actually had a quote where he's something to the effect of, you know, Kevin can get 25 points no matter what. It's how he gets those 25
points.
You
don't even notice. Yeah, you don't even notice.
And the question is, how is he going to get it? Well, the last couple of games, and you could see this coming, he was starting to go, starting to really play the right way. And he was starting to share the ball. He was starting to be more efficient.
I loved him in game two.
Yeah.
Like, it was Steph's game.
That's right.
But watching him dish off the attack is just something I so badly... want to see him do on a regular basis.
Game two was one of the best games the Warriors have played this year.
Yeah, you're right.
Really?
Game one and three, they were not at full capacity,
yeah,
which is why the Cavs are kicking themselves. But they're so good that
see,
they can
the
win when
they're
not at full capacity.
You know, I know LeBron had the quote last night, it's like playing the Patriots. I disagree. Like, I understand what he means by that, and that you have very little margin for error. But the Patriots are known for their execution. They're known for...
And they cheat.
That's why we got her on the pod. I love it. But they're known for discipline, regimentedness. They don't say anything. They don't do anything.
The Warriors
right?
like, are not disciplined.
No, the Warriors were 26th in the league in turnovers.
They are disciplined defensively, though. They
yeah.
I interpret it as something else. I interpret it as LeBron kind of saying that they're adaptable. They can be whatever the game demands.
That's right.
You want to be a pass-happy system team? Great. You want to be the Kevin Durant All-Stars? That's fine, too. You want to play kind of fast and lean? Yeah, we can do that. You want us to pick them apart in the half court? We can do that, too. Like, to me, what I took the Patriot metaphor to mean is that they are so – they can be whatever brand of team the game demands at any moment.
Because they're more talented.
Because they're more talented.
That's it. It just comes down to they are more talented.
They can morph themselves into whatever – fast, slow, big, small – half-court execution-ish, ISO, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They lead the league in every style.
So to me, the thing that LeBron's going to be asking himself is, what do I really need to beat them? Do I need another, like, white-hot superstar? Or do I need, like, a team of, you know, malleable players?
Who do they need to get to keep him?
Shelly, I don't know. I mean... To me, the only way to functionally get another significant piece is to trade the number 8 pick.
Yep.
But they can't just trade the pick. The when you make a trade in the NBA, you have to send out salary.
Yeah.
So they have to going to have to send players or player to get it. So I don't know who they have to send, unless you're talking about Kevin Love, and because I don't think anybody's. Taken Tristan Thompson and J.R. Smith, those are their other, or George Hill, those are their big
sellers. Did people in Cleveland forget how bad it was the last time he left? Have they forgotten?
They're happy that they won a championship. You know, I think I've heard this from a lot of people is that they don't care if he leaves or stays.
Yeah.
It's not like before.
Have they forgotten? Like, I mean, I know there's this sense, there's a little bit of LeBron fatigue because of everything that comes with him, because of the level you play at. We've been asking questions of guys in the team, like, isn't it hard to play with LeBron? Like, isn't there so much pressure on you, right? And, like, I think Roddy Hood gave a good answer the other day. And, you know, when you – the stage and the magnification
not
of everything
Kobe
that
pressure,
happens.
Though, right? Remember the pressure? It's not like Kobe pressure.
Well, Kobe would just yell at you to fit your face.
Right.
This is like the whole world watching everything you do. And every move you make is scrutinized.
Well,
right? I mean
– I actually think that the Cavs should do is they should double or triple the size of the championship banner that they won in 2016.
And then just pretend it's three?
Well, because – with each moment that passes, that accomplishment only looks bigger.
Interesting.
You know?
Okay, so, I mean, there's a lot of radical ideas out there of, like, what they could do, what the Cavs could do to get better.
I have a radical idea.
To keep LeBron. Okay, you want to just go for it?
LeBron should call Durant at the end of the finals and ask if he'd be interested in teaming up.
I like that idea.
Yeah. That would be... I
mean, from a legacy standpoint, it's not good for either.
Durant can't do it. But I'm just saying, I would make the call.
Yeah, why not?
Hey, Draymond did it.
Who could do it?
Exactly. I know.
I mean, Durant isn't such a... He may not be 100% happy because of all the dynamics, but he's going to have his second championship, and he's going to get paid. And I'll be interested to see how many years he signs for. He has the option to...
Do you think he starts going on the LeBron plan?
Well, he has been on the LeBron plan.
Right.
He should go on the LeBron plan. He will make more money by going another one plus one.
Yeah.
I mean, but he has the option. He has the option to sign a 4-year max.
Right.
So, well, I'll just
he can do the 5-year max after next season. Correct?
That's true.
It's more money, but
I'll just without getting into the machinations of it. He has the option to sign a 4-year max, or he can sign a 1-year contract.
Here's the thing about Kevin, and I think it's relevant when we think back on LeBron's history too. when you think back to him going to Miami, both of you guys were there for that. You know, there was the sense that, like, he could never really resurrect his legacy after leaving and winning a championship in Miami. Like, the championship in Miami was meaningful, but it was not as meaningful as winning in Cleveland, correct?
Sure.
Like I said, they should make this the banner bigger.
I just think the legacy thing is crock. A championship is a championship. No one is going to look back at the totality of a career and say, well, you know, he played with a really good guy in Miami. Two of them, actually. Like, no one, it's just madness. Like, I just think well, Durant's legacy. That 33-footer, that's legacy, my friend. Yeah.
Well, there's a picture of it up in the Warriors training facility right now.
You should make it right.
He bandwagged. No, nobody. I mean, no one looks
not five, not six, not seven. That's part of the legacy.
I don't know. I just think the narrative is big and rich and huge, and I don't think the highlights of that legacy get diminished by this stuff. I don't mean to sound Pollyannish about it. I just think when we talk, well, it hurts his leg. Oh God! I mean, I just don't buy it.
I kind of tend to agree with you. Like, I think it comes down to the ring count at the end of the day, and like LeBron's going to get more of a pat. He's going to get the Jerry West treatment, but because of. Look, it's not like he was ever favored in these series. Like, when has he ever lost as a favorite?
He's been favored twice in nine. He lost one of them, too, and they were favored.
Yeah, that's the only one.
So he's one under par. I mean, he's going to be 3-6. It's like, yes, better he should not have made the final, so he could be 3-3. Like,
but he's been so good in these finals. Like, how does this hurt his legacy?
I don't know.
Good.
I think it just depends on who you're talking to. It evolves. But the Cavs are somewhat hamstrung. They're also hamstrung by the fact that to really use the eighth pick effectively, they have to do it at the draft. You don't want to pick a player because you pick a player, you limit the teams you can do. You have to trade the pick. And at the draft, they are not going, I would be stunned. I guess it's not impossible, but at the draft, I would expect them not to have a commitment from LeBron.
Wow.
And therefore they're,
go for it.
They don't know. Now, some people would say, when LeBron leaves, he's an unrenewable resource. There will never be another player for 50 years that plays on this team like that, and that you scrap and claw for every single possible season. And even if it's for just one more, it's the eighth pick, so what? Do it. Call the Blazers and try to get CJ McCollum, whatever. Yeah. You know, love and the eighth pick for McCollum and another piece that you like on the Blazers. Other people would say, LeBron won't commit to the Cavs. The Cavs can't be held hostage by him. They need to pick the best player they can and be getting ready to move forward. Other people would say that.
So we have such short memories now. I think people forget everything that happened the last two times that LeBron made a big change. But, Kevin, we are fortunate to have two people in the room who were in Cleveland the first time LeBron left, Shelly, and the second time. When he came back.
Talk about those.
Standing outside that building in downtown Cleveland, reporting live, Shelly Smith.
Shelly, it was so hot.
Oh, yeah. It was miserable.
And in downtown
Akron. No, it was not hot. It was hot out. It was miserable. You just said Shelly was so hot. I'm like, no, I wasn't hot.
Shelly's hot, girl.
No.
It was so hot.
It was miserable. We were sweating.
And it was wonderful to spend all those hours with you, but we could have done so in much more comfortable conditions.
And then we had to go to Akron.
How was it hotter in Akron?
There was no lake.
I don't know. It was hot.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
That was amazing. If I could report today the way I reported back then, Twitter was in its infancy.
Amazing.
I had like 13,000 followers.
Yeah.
I was sitting in the we ought to just like, Andrew, we ought to go back and just have a reading of my tweets.
It
was my finest hours on Twitter ever. Unfortunately, it was 8 years ago. I was just sitting in the lobby of the building.
Were you taking pictures too? Did it have that capability at that point?
Coffee shop.
The coffee shop was like for six people. And we were all sitting there and the elevator lobby was right there and there was no place for them to wait. So I was just sitting there reporting on when everybody came and went.
Right. And here come the Knicks. And I remember Donnie Walsh with his neck brace. Right?
And it was, it was like, well, the Heat are running long. The Clippers are waiting in the hallway.
Well, remember,
the Bulls can't get in the building.
That brought in, remember, carts full of stuff, like carts full of beer or something.
No, it was like AV equipment. Yeah.
Oh, I guess it was. I guess I was hoping it was
beer. You were just
but it was because they had a big presentation and the whole thing. I just remember all that.
That would never happen today.
No.
But it was just such a different time.
It was.
You know, tweeting about Jay-Z staying back and getting his private audience with LeBron.
Right.
And Prokhorov and the Nets group passing the Knicks group in the hallway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And it was like, you looked at the two groups and you're like, the Knicks ain't winning.
No.
You know, the Nets were so much more impressive looking.
They were. And he's a cool guy. I mean, I thought he was bringing in cases of Russian vodka, but I don't think that was true.
I remember LeBron came in when he was wearing like basketball shorts and like a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Now these guys are wearing $5,000, $8,000 suits. You know, Riley got there like super duper early, like 45 minutes before LeBron did. And he was pacing in the hallway, like amping himself up.
That's awesome. Picturing Riles like that. Well, but here's what's interesting. That's not going to happen anymore. Like LeBron's,
those days are over.
Also, over the meetings. Also, he doesn't need a meeting.
I'm not going to be able to sit there and watch the entrance as they come and go. That was not going to
happen. Well, so we've all had this like little evolution, right? So the last time I was in Vegas for when he was leaving the Heat, and my assignment for SportsCenter was to like stake out the hotel where they were going to have the meetings. And there was just like two meetings. It was really just the Heat and the Cavs that got meetings. And the Heat meeting actually happened back in the first one. The Cavs meeting, the first one with Dan happened back in Miami when Dan flew on that private plane.
We didn't even know at that point.
Right. Which was amazing that, you know, we were all tracking the plane and the tail number and all that. But the second meet, right?
FlightAware.com.
FlightAware.com.
He blocked it the next day.
It was the greatest. And then the next time was, I remember being, I guess I can say it now, it doesn't matter anymore, right? It was at the and it was in the tower suites, right? That's where all the players, you know, during summer league and Olympics. So we were there and I was sitting in the lobby getting ready and me and my producer were there and Sean Fitzgerald was my producer. And so I had this one area by the elevators and he had out by the parking lot. So like we thought between the two of us, we would definitely, you know, catch the Heat coming in or catch the Cavs coming in. And like we just basically sat there and saw nobody, and then all of a sudden it was over, and I was like, how did they get past us? We were in the only spots where there could be people coming in. And the answer is, we're such a high level of sophistication now, they took the secret entrance. There's like secret entrances to get
up, of course,
through those elevators and towers and stuff like that.
Ocean's 11.
Oh, totally. Yeah, especially in Vegas.
It was the Tiger Woods entrance.
But the person I did see as I was sitting right by the elevators was Phil Jackson.
Your old buddy.
Like there was a 30-minute window where I like lost my mind. Like, Phil's going up the elevators. Is Phil going to meet with LeBron? What's going on? What's happening? Oh my God.
Paranoia.
Oh my God. Is there a Knicks meeting? And I actually just was like, I just need to go over there and I just need to go ask Phil. Like, am I going to do that? And of course I did that because that's very on brand, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like I wouldn't just sit there discreetly. And I went over to him and he was like, very shocked to see me and nice about everything, but wouldn't confirm or deny anything. And I later found out he was just like staying there. Like just going back to his room after a summer league game. But like, I'm wondering what this next free agency is going to be like. Will there even be meetings? Will he even meet face to face with anyone?
If he's looking to leave, he has to meet with the owners. He's going to have to sit face to face with the owners.
Right.
Because the ownership is super duper important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about the GM? Since we already did a little Colangelo discussion.
Not as important.
Yeah.
I don't think.
So Andrew Hahn, a couple weeks ago we were sitting around and you were telling me, and I can say this with complete honesty, how much you enjoyed your Sunbasket meals that you were getting.
Yes, I do enjoy
them.
So
tell me about it.
This is fantastically timed. You can tell that we do this a lot. But I do really enjoy the Sunbaskets that I've been getting. There was I believe it's Hungarian meatballs and quinoa pasta that I had this week. That sounded very weird, but then I followed the directions, I put it all together, it tasted great. And every time I get one of these boxes from Sunbasket, I think about how when I first signed up our hosts for Sunbasket, you were so resistant to do it. And it makes me angry because I feel like you would like a lot of this stuff, Brian.
Yeah, you know, I am a very picky eater. And it drives my wife crazy. She would probably love it, especially when I'm on the road. But, you know, I do all the cooking in my house. So one thing that would appeal to me would be maybe them showing me new recipes that I could put my own slant on, too.
Like, all they do is they give you a recipe book, and there's a bazillion different options. There's, like, paleo. I think that Kevin keeps on insisting that he needs to get the paleo plan, gluten-free, vegan, Mediterranean, etc., etc. And I feel like, at a minimum, you would take all of these fresh ingredients that they would send you, and you're like, no, I don't like cilantro. I'm not going to use this. But this piece of pork looks pretty good. I am going to use that. And like, oh, here's a good idea in this recipe book. I'll follow that part. Brian, I feel like you should reconsider in trying to try out this Sunbasket product.
Well, they have an app, and then there's 18 weekly recipes. I feel like if there's 18 recipes, there's got to be some in there that I would like, right?
I would hope so.
Sunbasket it appeals to the more well-rounded individual, of which I am not. but maybe they could bring me 1 degree closer to it.
What if I contacted Sunbasket and I said, Brian Windhorst is willing to try your product, and here's the three, meals that he wants. Can we give that a shot?
I think maybe we should. I think I owe it, as they're supporters of our podcast, I feel like I owe it to them for that. Right. So
and
maybe
you know
we should go down that route.
And if it doesn't happen or you don't enjoy it, who would know, Brian? No one will know.
That's true. But listen, all of my friends do like Sunbasket, so I can give their ring endorsement. And if you would like to try it, you can go to sunbasket.com/hoop today to learn more. And you can get actually $35 off your first order. That's a pretty damn good deal, I have to say.
Yeah, you can Sunbasket.
Yeah. That sounds like a lot off. $35 off. Sunbasket.com/hoop. That's sunbasket.com/hoop.
Guys are retelling these last LeBron free agencies. Is it a foregone conclusion that he's leaving then?
Is
the assumption that everyone's leaving?
I don't think anything's a foregone conclusion, but I'm just going to say, like, I don't like telling this story because it doesn't reflect well on David Griffin and it doesn't reflect well on LeBron in a weird way.
Yeah.
But the LeBron folks swear that he did not know who the general manager of the Cavs was when he signed, when he committed.
Yeah. I believe
that. I find that very hard to believe.
Really?
LeBron doesn't know who the general manager is
He has a pretty superior intelligence gathering operation,
yeah,
right?
I mean, yeah.
They swear. And it's not meant, when they say that, it's not meant to be an insult to David Griffin. What the point that you're trying to make is, he selected the Cavs for reasons mm-hmm. that were not about ownership or the direction of the team. And so this time I expect to be different
yeah.
because the competency of the management and ownership is going to be so important.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, the concept that whoever the general manager is going to swing it,
I know,
is not
like I've been asked many times. I'm sure you guys all have been on podcasts of, hey, the Sixers should go get David Griffin. That would be the trump card.
They could hurt. Play. I mean,
it wouldn't hurt, but I mean, listen, LeBron's a billionaire, you guys. Like he,
when you're trying to move probabilities a tenth of a percent, though, it's okay. Certainly.
Some familiarity and an executive he likes. Yeah, that, sure. That's in the plus column. But in terms of like looking someone in the eye and saying, can I entrust the final years of my career to you and your franchise? That's going to be billionaire to billionaire.
It's owner. Yeah.
Yes, exactly correct. And I don't know if he's ever going to have a full trust level, but he's got to have some sort of comfort level.
That's right.
But the interesting thing is when you start handicapping owners, who would you want that guy to be?
Or a girl.
Or a woman.
Well, there you go.
I mean,
since we're talking about the Lakers.
I mean, you know, let's put it this way. The Lakers having the ability to bring Magic Johnson and Jeannie Buss into the room is a plus. LeBron knows who the general – I don't know if he – I assume he knows Rob Pelinka. LeBron knows who runs the Lakers and owns the Lakers, right. Okay? And there's a comfort level there because his agent has spent the last 9 months around the Lakers, did a huge deal for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. There is a familiarity level there. The question is going to be, LeBron's not going to go to the Lakers because he thinks Magic Johnson is a great individual with
because Magic was his favorite player growing up.
Right. He's going to go, if he goes to the Lakers, it's going to be because what they can do for the rest of his career.
That's right.
So I think that's important, and that's going to be all handicapped out.
What do you think they can do, though? And I'm just playing down. This is not a loaded question.
No, I agree with you.
What can they do?
So I think what's interesting, and I think LeBron even had a quote yesterday. I'm going to go check the quote sheet. Because, I, what we've learned from LeBron free agencies in the past, and Brian has been very good at reading tea leaves and picking up on all the crumbs that he leaves behind when you look back. You wrote a whole book on it, right? Like the Zydrunas Ilgauskas night was the whole chapter of the book, right? And it was important. He said something last night, and it was talking about the types of players that are on the Warriors. The high basketball IQ, the good shooters, the people who can create space. I really think he has a very good understanding of the types of players he needs to win and he needs to play with. I think at this stage in his career, he needs to play with somebody who can help, who can create offense and take some of the load off of him. That could be Alonzo Ball. Okay.
The thing about it is, Ramona, he needs.
But the Lakers do not have shooters right now.
That's right.
The Lakers do not. They have some high basketball IQ guys, but they're young. Okay. And I wrote a column this summer. I mean, not this summer, the spring. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. It was before this, okay? Most of the Lakers' best players are 22 and younger. Like, that's not exactly the profile of a team that LeBron James would join.
But what's interesting about this conversation is we've just moved from it's going to be about the owner to parsing the rosters.
That's right.
So it's interesting.
It has to be the owner who has a willingness to do what it takes to find the players who can fit LeBron.
And quite frankly, Rob and Magic do not have a track record of doing that.
Yeah, and guess who does? Dan Gilbert.
Yeah.
Dan Gilbert has a track record, whether it's – and that track record, yes, also includes, you know, everything that happened this year.
Comic Sans and everything else. Right?
Comic Sans, everything else. But he has shown a willingness to spend gigantic amounts of money, to go deep into the luxury tax, to do what needs to be done, to sign the players that LeBron wants him to sign.
The Lakers in the past have spent huge sums of money.
Yes.
You don't think that would be – I mean
– I think that matters, and I think the Kobe contract matters. Like, you go back in time –
It's funny. I improbably defended the Kobe contract.
I did,
too. At the time. But the reason I did is
– It's symbolic.
Fully recognizing it was a terrible
Absolutely.
Contract,
yes.
But that it was a signal to
That's
every
right.
future superstar – The custody of your legacy here.
That's right.
Would be important. And, I remember it was very
That's exactly right.
It was against my general sensibility.
But it was a symbolic thing. The team was going to suck for the next few years. And I think they understood that they had a lot of cap space, but cap space is only good if somebody wants to come play with you and somebody wants to use it. Now you can spend it on a bunch of bad contracts, but I think they have the Lakers and I know the Buss family really well. That was important. I talked about Jim and Jeannie about it. That was important to them to honor the legacy of their great players and to treat them well. They did that with Magic Johnson. Remember, people forget about this. Magic signed that $25 million contract. 25-year, $25
million. That was a
good deal. The lifetime contract.
That was
Jerry Buss gave him a piece of the team.
I know. That was a great deal for Magic.
Oh, my goodness.
That part
you know how much he sold that piece of the team for?
He probably shouldn't have sold it. He should have kept it.
Definitely shouldn't have sold it.
Did he have to sell it to go to the Dodgers?
No, no,
he might have needed the cash.
I mean, Patrick Soon-Shiong had a lot of it.
Only because we're talking, and you talk about ownership and all the criteria set forth. We ever consider Miami again?
I think you consider it. The problem is, I mean,
it's a very corporal environment, and I get that that's not necessarily his thing.
Well, the Heat love to the Heat love to work, and I just don't know if.
Right.
At this stage of his career.
Age 30.
As I said, it's a very corporate environment.
I gotta say, LeBron's playing 47 minutes. The Heat wouldn't play him 47 freaking minutes. I actually think that he yearns for the structure of the Heat organization at times.
Yeah.
But they have very little mechanisms to improve their roster. Basically, LeBron would have to go to the Cavs and say, trade me to the Heat. And the Cavs would probably be willing to acquiesce, but they're not taking Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, okay, we'll take Bam Adebayo. We'll take, why am I blanking? Goran Dragic. We'll take,
Olynyk.
You know,
Winslow.
Justice Winslow. Yeah. You know, they're taking the prime assets and LeBron's not going to,
right.
LeBron does, you know, I mean, is it functionally possible? The answer to that is yes. But then, by the way, they then have to get another free agent. They'd have to get Paul George to go to the Magic, to the,
Trade for somebody
to the Thunder and say, "Hey, now you trade me to the Heat." I mean,
or they could trade for somebody. I think there's going to be a lot more player movement than we all
via trades, though.
Via trades, not necessarily via.
Yeah, LeBron has the option in his contract, June 29th pickup, the Chris Paul maneuver. He can go to the Cavs and say, "Trade me to X," and the Cavs would most likely acquiesce. But they're not, like, for example, the Rockets. Like, LeBron could opt in and say, trade me to the Rockets.
Yeah.
The Cavs would attempt to work out a deal. However, they're not taking on Ryan Anderson. They're not going to take on Ryan Anderson to accommodate LeBron. They'll do a deal that can benefit them. They'll send
Capella,
him away.
Eric Gordon.
Yeah. They would consider doing that. But then again, if LeBron's going there and you're trading key pieces. Now, again, if you're the Rockets, yes. Do you say goodbye to Capella and Eric Gordon to get LeBron James? Yes. But you can't trade Capella for him because Capella is a free agent.
He's RFA,
You know. So it would have to be a post-sign and trade. And in that situation, the Cavs are limited because they're a repeat taxpayer. It could functionally happen, but it's important to recognize that LeBron doesn't want to go to a team that has to strip pieces off of it.
Here's what all this means. There is no great situation for him.
That's right.
That's really the takeaway here, is we can sit here and we can parse and talk about great ownership or magic in the room or the Heat are a little bit too militant about it, or you trade him here, but then they lose the things that would want him there in the first place. The bottom line is he doesn't have a great decision to make.
A lot of people would say Philly. I say whoa, because LeBron has been very successful with two things. One, shooters.
Mm-hmm.
And if he goes to Philly, Ilyasova, Bellinelli, and JJ probably gone.
They're all free agents.
Unless, like, one of them takes a huge discount, which is possible. But their shooters are going to be hard to retain.
Right, JJ at the mid-level, Embiid is a legitimate stretch five now.
All right, hold your water. Is Joel Embiid, this is the second thing LeBron needs. LeBron needs a big man who can stretch the floor. Is Joel Embiid... You two know.
I know.
Him.
Yeah.
Is Joel Embiid prepared to spend 50 to 60% of the possession standing in the corner waiting for LeBron to deem it possible to throw him the pass?
They do more creative things than that. I don't think he's a stand in the corner guy, but I think you can run a lot of stuff.
I mean, but play the Bosch.
Lift him.
That's what Brian's saying. Would he be Chris Bosch?
In other words, he's not going to get the post up touches he wants.
Well, he'll get some, but he, you know.
And let's be real, like, as LeBron ages, he's going to be more in the post.
Can I have like a warm take here?
Yes. A lukewarm?
I think Ben Simmons is a center.
Huh.
I kind of reject the premise that even such a center exists anymore. But you don't like him as a ball handler?
I like him as a ball handler. I hate him as a shooter. It makes him hard to match up in those situations. I think he's 6'10". He's an incredible defensive player.
But they are such a pro, and frankly, LeBron would make them even more post-structuralist. I mean, that team, and it's one of the reasons I love that team. It is, Brett Brown is a mad scientist in the best kind of
who
way.
Who is shooting?
I mean,
they had three of them, but they're all free agents.
Covington's a 39% guy. I know he bricked some in the playoffs. JJ comes back in some form.
I think you're making a major assumption there. JJ will be back when JJ is back.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, He did a 1 year, $23 million contract, but he needs some security. Like players going, they do that. You do that once. I don't think you
I'm saying this. Can he live on the MLE?
I'm just saying, I'm listening to people and they're like, oh, Philadelphia. Yeah. It's done. David Griffin's going to be hired from Philadelphia. He's going to win the next 11 titles.
Yeah. Let's aggregate assets and get a shooter.
Yeah, now
you're talking.
I mean, I love Dario Saric. Yeah. But okay. You aggregate some assets and you go get a shooter.
Sounds good. Let me know when they do that. Because if I'm LeBron, I'm like, if I'm LeBron, I'm not going to be piece A.
That's right.
I'm not going to be the guy that shows in there and says, okay, let's team build.
So aggregate LeBron's going to be piece A. Get the shooter and then get LeBron.
That's the interesting thing about this offseason is every year in years past, LeBron is the first domino to fall, but it seems like this year he's going to be the last one.
He won't be the last one.
He's going to survey the landscape, though, and say, this is where I'm going to go, but not try and drag everyone with him.
But where are the shooters? I mean, they're in Houston. If we're using that metric now, okay, so let's talk about where
should
he go.
I just covered him in the game seven when they went 7-for-4.
Exactly. Well, that's my point. I mean, where are the shooters in this league? Boston? I mean, no. I mean, it's
Cleveland.
There you go. Path of least resistance.
To be continued.
And path of least resistance and the path of most riches.
Oh, very nice.
We haven't spoken about that. If you want to talk legacy, how about being the highest paid player in NBA history and no one's going to be able to touch you?
We'll save that for a later podcast because we have to go work.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
This has just been... thank you for joining the Hoop Collective podcast. Ramona Shelburne is here. Kevin Arnovich. Shelly Smith stopped by. She just left. She just threw the microphone down. So.
She did. That's how Shelly...
I'm just done with you people.
That's how legends roll. They're just like...
That's true. And Andrew Hahn. And thank you to... the Lexus Lounge at Cavalier Facility for hosting us.
And several of the arena workers who were going to come in and clean and decided not to while we were podcasting.
Thank you very much.